is open. I'm going to start off with a work session on Senate Bill 1529. I'm going to call up Chris and Caitlin to take us in to the dash eights, which will replace the bill and has been kind of the focus of lots of work, work by the LRO and others to try and arrive at what I would call a loose compromise of this difficult issue. So, Caitlin, you want to just walk us through the eights section by section and give us kind of the big picture and the little picture at the same time, if that's even possible.
I will try my best. So, Chair House, members of the committee, the dash eights, I would say big picture, they largely maintain the audience method of apportioning these receipts. In general, so there are technical changes. The broadcaster specific statutes are being repealed, but we're going to go with the audience factor for most of this. So I'm going to go section by section and talk about the changes. In section one of the bill, this is just indicating that this is going to be a standalone provision. Section two defines broadcasting, which is that one-way definition we've talked about before, but the MPA suggested a additional couple of words, so now it adds programming through so that it's clear it applies to programming and not just any one-way signal. We also have a definition of total gross receipts, and this is a definition that is present in current law. Under those specific broadcaster statutes. And this is kind of the language around that Comcast 2018 decision, which says if you're a broadcaster, total gross receipts means all of your gross receipts except for tangible personal property and real property. So we're maintaining those two definitions. 2A here basically lays out the use of audience or subscribers to calculate the numerator of the sales factor. It indicates that taxpayers should use third-party rating information or information from their books and records to apportion sales to the numerator using this audience approach. And that's a little bit more clarity in statute than before. So trying to indicate that first use third-party, then use books and records, and then the part B here on the next page gives the department an option to use the ratio of Oregon population to U.S. population if third-party ratings and the taxpayers' books and records are not able to identify audience. So that's kind of the general audience provision. Then in the next paragraph, in sub three, this is an attempt to deal with cases where industry maintains that they do not have information on their audience when they're licensing. So for example, if a broadcaster or a network is licensing to a streaming service, and then that streaming service is delivering content to consumers, the streaming service is in some ways a competitor with the licensee, with the network. And so they don't always provide information on how much of the content is being viewed, how frequently, where the subscribers are, et cetera. So in this one kind of narrow area of revenue for these types of taxpayers, we aren't able, or they maintain they're not able to determine audience. And so the bill outlines a different approach of sourcing sales to the numerator, which is similar to what you've seen in previous drafts, which uses 0.6% multiplied by the taxpayer's receipts from licensing to these subscription services or advertising on these subscription services. So again, this provision is kind of an approach to this narrow area where industry maintains they really aren't able to get this information from third-party ratings or from their contracts. And so this is another approach to better deal with that revenue stream.
And the 0.6%
The 0.6% is just a result of negotiations, I think, between these ongoing discussions about amendments. Chris?
So, Mr. Chair, for the record, Chris Allenack, Legislative Revenue Office, it was that this is the point where the commercial domicile was coming into play. So going back and forth between whether or not to use commercial domicile or getting at some notion of audience, this was the result of that those negotiations or the back and forth there.
Right. And so this is kind of where we marry the two approaches somewhat.
I think that's a fair way to describe it. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then moving on to sub four, this provision allows taxpayers engaged in broadcasting to elect to use that the audience apportionment method, or what that's familiar, or what you're familiar with that as, using that method to all of their gross receipts. So under current law, combined with the Comcast decision, a taxpayer uses their audience apportionment factor and applies it to the total gross receipts, which we defined earlier in the bill. And so this allows taxpayers to elect to do that if they would like.
So would that be the prior 2014 method?
So Senator Haas, it's the prior 2014 method, but kind of combined with the result of that Comcast decision. But this is equivalent, so this subparagraph four is equivalent, or subsection four, is equivalent to current law.
I see. So this too is part of the compromise to...
Yes, I think that's fair. Instead of, because at one point the discussion was, like, current law is all receipts go into one bucket apportioned by audience. And then one of the versions, the introduced version, was just to go fully to market-based sourcing. And so now it is kind of a hybrid where some revenues will go market-based sourcing, and some folks, some taxpayers will have the option of sticking with what is now current law.
Okay. So one thing I want to mention in Section 3 that's not new language is that Section 3, Sub 1, does indicate what the denominator of the sales factor will be. And so just because it's not bolded, I want to indicate that even though we're talking a lot about the numerator, the denominator is defined in 314.665. So going through Section 3, it deletes some references that are no longer makes sense, given that we're going to repeal the specific broadcaster statutes. That repeal happens in Section 4. So this is, Section 4 is repealing the statutes that specifically call out this industry. And then the rest of the bill talks about applicability dates and effective dates. And one other thing I want to mention is that even though it's not explicitly spelled out in this amendment, the Department of Revenue does have general rulemaking authority, and so that still applies to this case, even though there's not bolded language indicating that. And I'm happy to answer any questions about the sections that you might have or the provisions.
Yeah, you have a summary chart.
I do, yes.
I'm going to go through that.
And so the summary chart talks a little bit about these different revenue streams and also the revenue impact associated with each stream. So first, on the left-hand side of this chart, you can see there's a policy column. This deals with the audience method, or the 0.6 that I just walked through the draft. The second column is the revenue that policy applies to. So the 0.6 only applies to revenue from licensing and subscription services. That's kind of the simple case. In the audience method, it can either apply to your broadcasting sales only, in which case your other sales would default, if they're intangible, to market-based sourcing. Or the election that we just talked about, which is consistent with current law, is that you could elect to apply the audience method to your total gross receipts. That's kind of the policy framework we have here. So in the first, or in the second row of the table, the first policy option, we have the audience method applying only to broadcasting receipts, with the other receipts being sourced using market-based sourcing when they're intangible. We expect this to be a slight revenue decline, and this 0.2 is a very rough estimate of what that could be. The reason that we expect this to be a slight decline is that given the third row of the table, so given that the taxpayers have the option to elect to use current law and apply the audience method to all of their gross receipts, they will only choose to apply it to broadcasting receipts when it's a tax cut for them. Right? So if they're deciding between row two and row three, so the two audience method options, they're likely to pick the one that results in a lower tax liability. And so they will only select the second row when it's a lower tax liability. So we believe that will always be a decline. So that's a slight decline of 0.2 million, and these are annual estimates. The audience method applied to total gross receipts, that is current law, and so there's no revenue change associated with that policy within the bill. And then the 0.6 applied to licensing to or advertising on subscription services will result in roughly a $420,000 decline, so 0.4 million here on an annual basis.
Now, is this, are these changes based on current law, which is what we did before 2014, or is it based on the last year?
So, Senator Haas, these changes or these estimates are based on current law. So, the audience method of apportionment that you did before 2014.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And just ballpark figures, how would these look if we were still doing that 5-year change that we did that just expired?
So, if we were still doing the commercial domicile, the total revenue. Okay, so taking a step back, the expected annual revenue from this audience method is about $10 million. Under the commercial domicile method, over the 5 years it was in place, I think the total tax collected was like under $15 million, so it's substantially less. Now, if this were to be entirely commercial domicile, I would think these revenue losses would be larger. But without looking at the tax data right now, I'm not able to give a specific number.
Okay. Questions on this?
I'm good.
Chris, you have a LRO, executive summary, conclusion to this saga, an epilogue?
I think one of the, I guess the only thing I would add is at a conceptual level, as we've tried to convey, there's a potential point of confusion with the revenue impact, given that current law is where we are now and we've been there since January 1. So nobody has filed a tax return under current law. And so there are different perspectives. For the taxpayers, this will be a tax increase going from what the past 4 years under commercial domicile. Commercial domicile was a lower level of tax. So moving, if we're talking about time period, say the 14 to 19 time period to now, that's a tax increase. But the revenue impact statements that LRO puts out are always compared to what is current law for this point moving forward. It's not a what it was last year compared to this year. So the revenue impact, that's why that's a revenue loss, because the audience method that is current law as of today is kind of a high water mark for the revenue coming in. And so the revenue impact statement, as Kate described, is a revenue loss from that. It's a slight revenue loss. But from the taxpayer's perspective, it is a higher level of tax compared to prior years. And I think that's where the negotiations came in.
Senator Bentley?
Chair Haas, thank you. So if this is the taxpayers considered as a tax increase, is this a 3/5 vote?
Chair Haas, Vice Chair Finley, it is not, because it's always compared to current law. The taxpayer is looking at, well, what I did last year versus this year. And the revenue impact statement looks at, okay, well, if the law doesn't change, what are you going to pay this year? So that's why it's not a 3/5 vote.
Well, Chris and Caitlin, I really appreciate your work on this. I know it's been a difficult subject for years, and you've had to do studies. You've had to go back and look at for data when there wasn't data, and still do studies. We kept turning our lonely eyes to you, and appreciate your help in getting us to this place. And maybe we'll have a law that we can live with for a while. So, Senator Finley, you want to do dash eights?
Mm-hmm. Are you ready?
Ready.
Chair Haas, I move the dash eight amendment be adopted into Senate Bill 1529.
Senator Finley moves the dash eights into Senate Bill 1529. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted.
Chair Haas, I move Senate Bill 1529 as amended to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Finley moves Senate Bill 1529 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, Senate Bill 1529 moves to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation, and I'll be the carrier.
Thank you.
Thank you all. With that, we'll adjourn.
Thanks to the LRO for the great work.
Thank you.